Ellie had hoped if Jack made an effort with his marriage, Ethan might eventually come around to the divorce and them being together. Stupid idea, she now knew. Ellie didn't count on ignorance being one of the biggest drawbacks of staying away from Jack. She knew nothing about how the farce was going over, if Ethan was buying it. All Ellie could tell from Ethan's expression was this was the last place he wanted to be.
I thought you and Julie were big buddies.
She wants to be. She's called and texted me 100 times since Saturday. She's the neediest person I've ever met.
Kelly fixed her beauty pageant smile on her face.
Hey, what are y'all doing here?
We're on our way home from Matt and Amy's visitation.
Did you go?
We did, Kelly said.
It's just so sad. Those kids being orphaned, Julie said.
Are you friends with Madison? Ellie asked Ethan. He shrugged.
We have a couple of classes together.
I'm sorry about the election, Ellie, Julie said. Though I'm not sorry for me.
Kelly bristled.
What do you mean? Michelle told me the first thing her father wants to do is fire Jack. God, Michelle Doyle is such a...
Ellie placed her hand on Kelly's arm.
Do you want Jack to get fired?
Ellie asked. After their little conversation that morning, Ellie knew the answer. But it wouldn't hurt for her best friend to get further confirmation what a narcissist Julie was, and straight from the horse's mouth.
You know I wouldn't mind a reason to leave Stillwater.
Kelly's arm tensed beneath Ellie's hand. She did not like people trashing their hometown, though Ellie knew her best friend would be happy to see the back end of Jack McBride.
A lot of people think Jack's doing a good job. What about you, Ethan? Do you want to leave?
Ellie asked. Ethan studied his mother before turning his attention to Ellie. Had she caught a hint of irritation in his expression, or was that wishful thinking?
I don't want to move again.
How's your photography going? Still finding a lot of subjects around town?
Ellie asked.
Yeah. Looking forward to the changing leaves.
You have to catch it quick. They're here one day and gone the next. You should go out to the lake when they turn. You can get some great pictures out there, I bet.
He's turned into quite the photographer since we gave him the camera for his birthday last year,
Julie said.
You left on my fucking birthday. Or have you forgotten?
Ethan said. Julie's smile wavered.
Your dad and I agreed on it all before I left. Remember?
Whatever.
Ethan moved away. Kelly recoiled visibly from Julie. Ellie knew that was it. Kelly Kendrick would be polite to Julie. She was a Southern woman after all. But she would never be friends with a woman who left her son on his birthday.
I wanted to stop by to see how you're feeling, Ellie, Julie said, her voice pitched high. She threw up on our run this morning,
she explained to Kelly. Kelly rubbed Ellie's back.
Are you still fighting that stomach bug?
I saw Sue today. I'll be better soon.
You need a vacation,
Kelly said.
I don't think a vacation will
Julie began.
Do you two want anything? Coke, coffee? Paige will make you something, on the house.
Ethan touched Ellie's arm.
I wondered if you still had that photography book you mentioned.
He moved away from the group, but kept his eyes on Ellie, as if willing her to follow.
Sure. Let me show you.
Ellie wanted to thank Ethan for saving her from his mother, but thought better of it.
I ordered a few for you. I didn't know what I was doing, so I ordered the ones with the best ratings on Amazon. Here.
With Vanna White hands, she showed Ethan the books, felt stupid, and shoved her hands under her armpits.
Cool. Thanks.
His hair obscured part of his face when he dropped his head down and flipped through a book. Ellie waited. Did he bring her over here to talk? Or was he just saving her from his mother? He remained silent.
Well, I need to start cleaning up.
She stepped away.
My dad said you two stopped seeing each other when my mom came back to town. Is that true?
Yes.
So you switched to my uncle?
Ellie sighed.
Damn it, I told Eddie people would think that.
She met Ethan's gaze.
Your uncle and I are friends.
Ethan looked like he smelled something foul.
You don't believe me. Why?
Why should I believe you?
Why shouldn't you?
Adults lie all the time.
Ellie couldn't argue with that. She glanced over at Kelly, who looked like she was about to explode.
You're right. But I wouldn't lie to you.
Why?
I want you to trust me.
Okay. Are you pregnant?
Ellie's breath left her in a whoosh, as though someone had punched her in the chest. Ellie'd never had a panic attack, but she wondered if this might not be the start of one. The sound came out as a gasp. She could tell by Ethan's expression the answer was all over her face. But luckily, Julie interrupted them.
Ethan, let's go.
She called across the room while Kelly stalked over to Ellie. Ethan put the book down.
So?
Ellie cleared her throat and tried to speak again.
Yes.
His eyes flicked to her stomach.
Thanks,
he said, and left as Kelly arrived.
What happened?
Ellie asked, still struggling for air.
Is it true?
Is what true?
Are you pregnant?
First Ethan, now Kelly. This was not how or where Ellie wanted to have this conversation. She motioned to Paige to get her attention.
We'll be in the back for a minute.
Paige waved her acknowledgement, and Ellie grabbed Kelly's arm and dragged her to the office and shut the door. Kelly's arms were crossed over her chest, her hip cocked in her no-bullshit pose.
Yes.
Kelly opened her mouth, closed it, opened it again.
I don't know if I should congratulate you or slap you. How long have you known?
For sure, today. I've suspected for a week or more.
Kelly pushed Ellie away.
And you didn't tell me?
I knew you'd react like this.
What did you think, I wouldn't notice eventually?
No.
Kelly gasped.
You aren't going to get an abortion.
No.
Then why wouldn't you tell me? Better yet, who's the father? Eddie? You said you weren't sleeping with him.
I'm not.
So what? This is the virgin birth?
No.
Is it that guy you go see in Dallas? What's his name, Kirk?
No, it's not Curtis.
Are you going to make me ask you 20 questions or just fucking tell me? Who's the father?
She stopped cold. Her eyes widened, then narrowed.
No way. You've told me you never slept with him.
Ellie nodded imperceptibly.
Jack McBride? You've been fucking Jack McBride while acting like you're dating his brother?
If you would stop for a minute and let me explain.
Oh, now you want to explain, since I've confronted you about it. Would you shut up for 1 second, huh? Jesus. This isn't about you, remember? It's about me. Me, I'm the one who's pregnant.
Kelly crossed her arms over her chest again and waited.
It happened before Julie came back. When she did, we stopped seeing each other.
You fucked him after knowing him less than a week? You told me to. I didn't think you'd actually do it. He's married.
He was filing for divorce.
That's what they all say.
He could file uncontested when she'd been gone 365 days. She came back on 364. We decided he needed to try to make it work. For Ethan.
For Ethan.
Why is it so hard to believe?
Does he know?
Ethan?
No, Jack.
I think Julie told him I was pregnant with Eddie's child. She believes we're together. Jack knows we're not.
The whole town thinks you're sleeping with Eddie, but you're pregnant with Jack's baby. Jesus, you know how to create a scandal. Sometimes I think you live for this shit.
That's totally not fair. It would be best for everyone if Jack got fired. Not for me. What, do you actually think he's going to leave his wife for you? They never leave their wives. Like, you have so much experience with married men. I watched Sex and the City. Jesus Christ.
Kelly shook her head.
I cannot believe you lied to me for 2 months. Right to my face, over and over. Ellie the Honest. You're a fucking hypocrite.
Typical. I'm pregnant at 42 years old, and all you can think about is how I didn't tell you soon enough. Here's a newsflash, Kelly. The world doesn't revolve around you. I don't tell you everything. I've never told you everything.
Kelly's head jerked back as if Ellie'd slapped her. Ellie's instinct was to apologize. She always apologized. Then Kelly forgave her and they moved on. This time, she didn't. Ellie matched Kelly's stance and waited. Kelly's face crumpled. She turned and walked out the door. Chapter 42. Eddie pulled into Doyle Industries' truck yard at 7:30 p.m. His timing was perfect. He'd run home, take a shower, and get to Ellie's before 9. He would have an hour to talk her into meeting Jack out at her lake house. He had no idea how difficult a job it would be. With a pregnancy, the election, downtown development, her new business, trying to lure new businesses downtown, Eddie was afraid Ellie was at the end of her rope. Doyle Industries was deserted. Eddie was relieved. Michelle had been calling and texting him all day. He'd have to come up with a pretty creative lie as to why he didn't reply. Say he lost his phone and didn't realize it was gone until he pulled in. He'd put the medal down to make it back before visitation ended so he wouldn't run into Michelle. The company was closed the next day out of respect for Matt and Amy. The drugs would be safe in the wheel wells until the following night after Matt and Amy were buried and condolences were received. Then business could return to normal. Too bad for Michelle that Tom Hunter planned to raid Doyle Industries at dawn. Eddie jumped from the cab and closed the door. A few weeks more and he would be done with this life forever. It was hard to believe he'd been doing it long enough to get a pension from the government. It would be enough money for him to live on and take some time to figure out what he wanted to do. First thing on his agenda was getting his Harley back from Abe. He'd missed it more than he thought he would. Then maybe he'd take it across the country, hit some national parks, do some camping, be alone. God, he wanted to be alone. He was sick of people. But more importantly, he needed to figure out who exactly Sean Edward McBride Jr. was. He laughed. Maybe he should ask Julie for advice on how to take a sabbatical. She'd probably want to go with him. Eddie almost threw up at the thought. Sure, she was a good lay, but she was totally 100% fucked in the head as well. Which made her his type, he knew. But he didn't want that type. He didn't want anyone. At least, not yet. Eddie twirled his keys around his finger as he walked to his 69 Ford. It was a great truck. He had some money saved. He'd buy a new Harley and keep this. Decision made, he rolled the truck yard gate closed and locked it. He turned around and almost ran into Brian Grant.
Shit, Grant, you scared me to death.
The security light backlit Grant's face, throwing it in shadow.
Did I? Sorry. What are you doing here?
I came to thank you.
For what?
For going to bat for me with Michelle. She gave me a job.
Well, good. How's Susan's hand?
Good. Things are looking up.
Glad to hear it, Brian. Michelle's a good boss.
Oh, I'm not working for Michelle.
But you just said, she thinks I am, but I'm not. Or, I won't be tomorrow when she's arrested for Matt Namey's murder. Who are you working for?
Me.
Eddie turned his head to follow the voice, and too late, saw out of the corner of his eye a brass-knuckle-covered fist rushing toward his temple. Part 3. The Fisher King. Chapter 43. Jack rang the doorbell 4 times before Michelle, hair twisted up in a clip, black-rimmed glasses over sleepy, hooded eyes, opened the door. She looked Jack up and down.
McBride, what are you dressed like that for?
Jack looked down and was as shocked as Michelle to see himself wearing a tan Stillwater PD uniform. The gun belt creaked when he walked, and the bulletproof vest pinched his underarms. Jack ignored her question and held the warrant out. We have a warrant to search your house and place of business. Realization dawned, and she laughed.
You are out of your fucking mind.
She snapped the warrant from Jack's hand and glanced at it. Chris appeared behind her, looking more hungover than sleepy. What's going on? Michelle handed him the warrant.
I'm calling Davey.
Chris looked from the warrant to Jack and Malik, and the sheriff's deputies arranged behind them. We're searching your house, Chris. We need you to step aside. He did, and he held the door open.
Yeah, Norman, they're here in my fucking house at 6 o'clock in the morning, Michelle said into her phone. Get your ass over here now. I'm calling Dad. Mom? Dad?
2 teenagers stood at the top of the stairs.
Jordan, Andy, get some clothes on,
Michelle said, then put her phone to her ear. Start downstairs, Jack said to the officers streaming into the house. Malik, stay near Michelle. The deputy nodded.
Dad, McBride is searching my house. He said he's searching my place of business, too. I don't know. I haven't heard from him.
Michelle's face tightened and she hung up. Michelle put the phone down on the counter and studied Jack. Without taking her eyes from him, she held out her hand to her husband.
Let me see the warrant.
Chris dutifully handed it to her.
Evidence pertaining to the death of Diego Vasquez, Paco Morales, Amy Doyle, and Matt Doyle.
Astonishment clear on her face, Michelle said,
The worst part about this is you have no idea who killed these people.
Why don't you and Chris have a seat? Jack said. This'll take a while.
How dare you?
Michelle said. She walked forward and stood toe-to-toe with Jack. He looked down on her with a placid expression.
You come into my house on the day of my brother's funeral and accuse me of murdering him. This town will never, ever forgive you.
Jack smelled her morning breath and tried not to gag. When I catch Matt and Amy's killer, no one will care. Michelle's lip curled.
You're not going to catch him in this house.
We'll see.
I'm going to change.
Brush your teeth while you're at it. He thought Michelle was going to claw his eyes out and was disappointed when she didn't try. Instead, she walked away. Malik followed. Michelle stopped at her bedroom door and saw the deputy.
What are you doing? You can't be alone.
Michelle sighed in exasperation, but went inside the room and let Malik follow. Chris watched his wife with amusement, which he wiped from his face when he saw Jack watching him. Funny, Jack said.
Not used to seeing my wife so flustered.
Jack tried to put his hands in his pockets, but was thwarted by his holster on one side. He settled for resting his hands on the holster, felt ridiculous, and crossed them over his chest. With 15 extra pounds of Kevlar, his crossed arms stuck out at a weird angle, making him feel like a genie about to work a spell. He dropped his arms down next to his side.
Nice uniform, Chris said.
Jack didn't answer.
I hate to tell you, but that isn't going to help you when Doyle comes after you.
It's not why I'm wearing it. Jordan and Andy Ryan, one of them wide-eyed and disbelieving, the other disdainful, came into the living room. Jordan sat next to her dad, and Andy sat on the fireplace hearth.
What's going on, Dad?
Jordan asked. She was the classic cheerleader type, fresh-faced and innocent-looking, but her expression at the moment was one of fear. They're searching the house, honey, he said.
Why?
Because our family is a bunch of crooks. Andy, on the other hand, looked like he would have fit right in with the hipsters in Brooklyn. Looking at the two of them, Jack would have guessed Jordan was watching over Andy in Cheney's Field, not the other way around. Jordan, can I speak with you for a minute? Her eyes widened. Why do you want to talk to her? Chris said. Jack smiled tightly at Chris. I need to ask her about Saturday night.
Sure.
She jumped up and walked to the kitchen. She pulled a bottle of water from the refrigerator, opened it, and sipped. Her hand shook when she lifted the bottle to her mouth. Jack moved around so Jordan had to turn to face him, placing her back to her father. I'm not going to tell your parents about Cheney's Field, okay? Don't look so terrified or your dad will ask questions. She nodded briskly. What time did you get home Sunday morning?
3.
Did you see your parents?
Yeah.
You did? Jordan's brows furrowed.
Yeah. I saw my dad coming out of my mom's room.
What time?
3,
she said, as if she couldn't believe he didn't remember she just told him. Did he see you?
I wouldn't be very good at sneaking if he did.
Was your mom here?
Why else would he be coming out of her room in the middle of the night?
Based on Jordan's expression, she clearly thought Jack was an idiot. You didn't see her, though.
No.
Okay, thanks. Jordan rolled her eyes and left as Michelle walked into the kitchen. She made coffee like it was any other day, and there weren't deputies wearing surgical gloves searching every drawer and cabinet around her. Jack went over to the door to Michelle's room and saw Malik searching the bottom dresser drawer. Malik stood and motioned to the drawer.
Chief.
Jack walked over and peered down at a 9mm at the bottom of what looked like her athletic clothes drawer.
That was too easy, Malik said.
Jack walked out of the room, found the crime scene tech, and motioned for him to follow. Jack stopped at the door. Simon entered and took a picture of the room at large, before slowly narrowing his focus to the gun in the drawer. Jack called Michelle over. She took her time. By the time she got there, Malik was holding the gun by the handle with two gloved fingers. Simon wrote on a labeled plastic bag. I thought you said you didn't have a gun.
I don't. That's not mine.
It was in your bottom drawer. Michelle's face drained of color, her expression of bravado.
Jack, I swear, that is not my gun.
Malik removed the clip and emptied the chamber and dropped it all into the bag Simon held open. He sealed it and walked past Jack and Michelle. Jack stopped him, took the bagged gun from him, inspected it, and gave it back to Simon with a nod. Simon had the tools in the mobile CSI unit to check for prints, but he would have to take it to Yorkville for ballistics. Not that he needed to. Jack would know that gun anywhere. Jack lowered his voice. Michelle, you need to come with me. Her eyes were panicked, shifting from Jack to Malik and finally to her family, sitting silently in the living room. I won't arrest you or cuff you in front of your family, but you have to come quietly and willingly. She nodded.
Let me put my shoes on.
They walked out of the house and saw Norman Davy patiently waiting out of the way. When they got abreast of him, Michelle said,
Norman, meet us at the station.
Michelle, I can't. I'm your father's business lawyer and the company is being searched. You'll have to find another lawyer.
Michelle stumbled, stopped, and turned to Davy. A riot of emotions played across Michelle's face, and for a split second, Jack thought she was going to sob. Instead, she straightened to her full height, said,
Tell Dad what's happened and call Bob Underwood,
and walked away, head held high. Jack stared out the window of Ann Newberry's office, his phone held to his ear. Hey, Julie. Is Eddie at home?
Where are you?
I'm in Yorkville. Julie sighed.
Of course you are. No, Eddie isn't here, and as far as I know, he never came home last night.
Have you talked to him?
Why would I have talked to him? What's wrong?
Jack picked up a picture from the credenza. And her daughter and her granddaughter dressed up for Halloween. He smiled, despite his concern for Eddie. The daughter and granddaughter were zombies, and Ann was dressed up like the sheriff from The Walking Dead. I've been trying to call him since last night and can't get in touch with him.
He's probably with his girlfriend, celebrating their good news.
I'll call her.
Did you even come home last night?
No, sorry. I was in Dallas until late, then I had to get a judge to sign off on a warrant to execute this morning. I've hardly had time to eat.
Jack, this is worse than when you were with the agency. I can't live like this.
This is how it is, Julie. If you don't like it, leave.
I'm taking Ethan with me.
Over my dead body. There was silence on the other end. Jack knew she might be gone when he got home, and he wasn't sure if she could manipulate Ethan into leaving with her or not. Don't do anything until we talk, okay? Jack said. This should all be settled down by tomorrow. I promise. Her laugh was laced with bitterness.
That's what you always say,
she said and clicked off. Jack let his phone fall to his chest. Should he text Ethan? Warn him his mother wanted to leave Stillwater and take him with her. Hope she waited one more day. Hope Ethan wouldn't leave with her if given the chance. He lifted the phone and placed the call he dreaded making. Though when Ellie answered, his shoulders relaxed and he smiled. Hey, it's Jack.
Hi.
She sounded wary. Jack couldn't blame her. He expected angry. Wary he could deal with. I'm sorry about yesterday.
Oh, thanks. I didn't expect to win.
No, not the election. About last night.
The victory party?
He heard the air quotes in her voice.
You didn't miss anything. Though your wife and son came by. That was fun.
No. I'm sorry I didn't make it out to your lake house.
My lake house?
Didn't Eddie talk to you?
I haven't talked to Eddie since Sunday night. He texted he was coming by last night, but he never showed. Why, what's going on?
I'm looking for Eddie. He didn't go home last night, and if he isn't with you...
Why would he stay the night with me?
I didn't mean it like that. It's just, where else would he be? Has he ever stayed out at your lake house?
No, but he might have seen me punch in the code. Do you want me to go check?
Can you?
Of course. You don't think he's in trouble, do you?
I doubt it, but still.
I'll go right now.
Thanks. Neither hung up. Finally, Jack said, Is it true? Are you... It took Ellie so long to reply, Jack thought she had hung up.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Is that a good oh my God or a...
Of course it's good. It's wonderful. He realized Ellie sounded subdued. Is everything okay? Julie said you threw up. Have you been to the doctor?
Yes, everything's fine,
she snapped.
Jack, this isn't a conversation I want to have on the phone.
No, right. I should have these cases wrapped up today, tomorrow at the latest.
Cases? Matt and Amy's case?
Yeah. I'll tell you all about it when I see you. Let me know when you get out to your lake house.
Okay. Jack?
Yeah?
Be careful.
Chapter 44. At first glance, Doyle Industries' parking lot looked like it did on any other business day. Upon closer inspection, the cars parked in front of the buildings weren't minivans, trucks, and sedans, but crime scene vans, generic black Suburbans that could only be government issue, sheriff's cruisers, DPS cars, and a lone Stillwater PD Tahoe. Miner got out of his truck and inspected the scene. Men and women in FBI and DEA windbreakers huddled together drinking steaming cups of Abe's coffee and grimacing. They either hadn't discovered Ellie's coffee shop or were out here before she opened. Miner chuckled to himself. Ellie was one of the few people making out like a bandit from all the crime. Miner ambled up to the group of agents. A DEA agent with a barrel chest and close-set eyes took Miner in from his Stetson to his cowboy boots, and by the wry expression on his face, slotted Miner in the bumpkin category. "Miner Jessen," he said, holding his hand out.
"Oh, right. Jack's mentioned you. Tom Hunter."
"Nice to meet you.
This is Special Agent Alex Dunn with the FBI.
A female agent with startling green eyes and a knowing smile held out her hand.
"Deputy?"
"Hunter," the DEA agent said into his phone.
"What?"
He walked a few feet away.
"Sergeant, actually," Miner said.
"Sergeant Jessen."
A strawberry blonde braid fell across Agent Dunn's left shoulder from beneath the loose-knit toboggan she wore.
"Mr. Doyle's been asking for you."
"For me?"
She nodded.
"When he's not cursing McBride."
"Where is he?"
With the hand holding her coffee, Dunn pointed behind Miner. Joe Doyle sat in his Ford about 30 feet away.
"Excuse me."
Miner walked around to the driver's side. Doyle rolled down the window. Waves of anger emanated from him.
"Why didn't I know about this? This is a federal operation. How would I know about it?" "Don't bullshit me, Miner. No way the feds raid a local business without telling the local cops."
Miner shrugged.
"They may have told Jack, but he didn't mention it to me." "What did the warrant say?" "Which one?"
Miner raised his eyebrows.
"There's one for physical evidence of the intent to sell drugs, and another for our financial records."
"Hmm."
"Hmm? That's the best you can do. Where the fuck did they get their information, huh? And why are they raiding on the day of my son's funeral?"
"Well, to the former, I can tell you they have someone in custody who's feeding them information."
"Who?"
Miner scratched his chin and looked away. He and Jack had gone over exactly what to divulge to Doyle, but he still didn't feel right about it. Jack was taking a couple of pretty big gambles on interpersonal relationships and human nature.
"Kyle Grant."
Doyle clenched his jaw and exhaled. He stared out at the front door of his business. An FBI agent propped open the doors and stood aside as other agents walked out the front door with computers.
"Fucking Eddie McBride."
"Joe, I need to ask you a question."
Doyle glared at Miner.
"Do you?"
"Witnesses say Michelle called you Sunday morning and told you about Matt discovering the operation. Is it true?"
Doyle nodded.
"And you said you'd go straight over to talk to him."
Doyle returned his gaze to his company being dismantled before his eyes.
"Yes."
"What time did you go over to Matt's?"
1:30.
"How long were you there?"
30 minutes.
"What happened?"
"I lied to him. I lied to my boy. He was going to leave, to move away. Back to Tyler to work with Sterry or Houston to be near Amy's mother. I couldn't have that. I told him I didn't know anything about what Michelle was doing and that together we'd fix it."
"Did you mean any of it?"
"No."
He drummed his fingers on the steering wheel and stared straight ahead, his brows furrowed as if calculating. Finally, he said,
"I called Michelle and told her it was time to move the operation permanently. She would move down there and run it from Houston."
"How'd she take the news?"
"Dead silence.
but I knew she would come around eventually. She's always done what I wanted her to do. Why didn't you mention your conversation with Matt to Jack when he interviewed you?
I didn't see anything, and they were alive when I left. I couldn't risk Jack finding out about the drug operation. Well, the jig is up now.
Doyle watched more agents with computers file out and nodded.
You haven't asked about Michelle, Miner said.
If it wasn't for Michelle and all of her fuck-ups, I wouldn't be watching the feds raid my business.
You realize you're giving McBride Michelle's motive for killing Matt and Amy, Miner said.
Doyle continued drumming his fingers on the steering wheel and stayed silent.
She'll be charged with 4 murders, Joe.
I know.
Chapter 45. Michelle Doyle Ryan sat at the interrogation table, hands clasped together, trying and failing to be the picture of calm confidence. Bob Underwood sat next to her, a blue Bic pen poised over a yellow legal pad. Jack leaned against the wall in the interrogation room while Anne sat across from Michelle and asked her questions, which Michelle stared at the corner of the room and refused to answer.
Simon rushed ballistics on the gun we found in your dresser, Anne said. It was a match.
Michelle's eyes flicked to Anne and away. Jack knew the question, "For what?" tickled the end of Michelle's tongue. Instead, she clenched her jaw, and Bob Underwood asked the question.
It's Jack's gun. The gun used to kill your brother and sister-in-law. And Paco Morales and Diego Vasquez. Your fingerprints were found all over the gun as well.
Michelle opened her mouth, closed it, then decided to break her silence.
That's impossible. I hate guns. I haven't touched a gun in years.
I'm not making this up, Anne said. She placed a copy of the fingerprint results in front of Michelle. She leaned forward and studied the paper. When she sat back, Bob inspected it.
I'm telling you, I've never seen that gun before you pulled it out of my drawer, Michelle said. Yet, it was in your dresser and your fingerprints are all over it.
Anne slid the fingerprint results away from Michelle.
We have witnesses who said you wanted to organize a meet with the Pedroza cartel and who heard you threaten your brother.
Did you ask Kyle Grant to set up a meeting with the Pedrozas? Jack said.
Who are the Pedrozas?
We know you wanted to meet with the Pedrozas to talk truce. Split up the drug trade in the county, maybe.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm vice president of the largest employer in York County. Legitimate businesses that pay all of our taxes and do good in the community.
Grant set up a meeting and things went south, Jack said. You executed Morales and Vasquez with my gun, that Grant was somehow able to get away from Vasquez.
That's the stupidest story I've ever heard.
I have to agree with Michelle here, Bob said, almost apologetically.
Why?
Anne asked.
Are these Pedroza's cartel? Michelle asked.
Anne and Jack remained silent, their withering expressions of disbelief all the answer she would receive.
Wouldn't killing them only bring more cartel to the area? More trouble for the local organization? It's a stupid business move, and I don't make stupid business moves. But maybe the rules are different for illegal businesses. I wouldn't know,
Michelle said.
Michelle,
Anne sighed,
you can stop the act. We know DI is the front for the local drug business. We have solid witnesses turning on you as we speak, and as your business crashes, more and more will come forward to save their own asses. The jig is up. We don't care about that anyway. That's the Fed's case. We're here to talk about 4 murders.
Here's the thing, Michelle, Jack said. Everything points to you.
Evidence. The gun that killed Morales and Vasquez was found in your dresser with your fingerprints on it. Motive for the Pedrozas is easy. Dueling drug operations. But Matt was a bit tougher. Until our witness told us about Matt stopping by DI and discovered you unpacking drugs from your heavy equipment. Michelle clicked her long red nails on the table and studied Anne and Jack.
Kyle's alive, isn't he? That's who you have in custody.
She laughed in disbelief.
He was right. Eddie's a fucking narc. We wanted to give you the chance to tell your side of the story, Anne said. Maybe Pigeon won't go for the death penalty.
We haven't heard any physical evidence that even put Michelle at the scenes, Bob said. It's all very circumstantial, relying on unreliable witnesses and a lot of supposition.
Michelle stared off into space, her nails clicking in a faster and faster pattern. Anne and Jack watched as Michelle calculated what to do. Bob leaned over and whispered in Michelle's ear. She shook her head and finally said,
"Shit."
"You're good and cornered, aren't you?" Jack said. "On the one hand, both sides of your business are going up in flames. On the other hand, you're the suspected murderer of four people."
"Suspected," Bob said. "This is a very weak case, and both of you know it."
She leaned forward and hit the table with her fist.
"Maybe if I say it enough, you people will listen. I didn't kill any of these people. I never met with the Pedrozas. Last I heard, they turned down the meat. Kyle was going to keep trying. As far as Matt and Amy go, Dad went by Matt Sunday morning to talk to him. He was going to get in line. Anyway, I wouldn't have killed my brother. I can't even believe you would think that of me."
"Did your father tell you Matt was falling in line?" Anne said.
"Yeah. Dad called and told me he'd talked to Matt and he'd worked everything out."
"What time?" Jack said.
2:15.
Anne closed her file and Jack stared at the floor.
"What? Ask him, he'll tell you." "We did ask him. He said he told you that you would need to move to Houston. Run your businesses from there," Anne said.
"And you were unhappy with the decision," Jack added.
"He's lying."
Disbelief laced her voice. Her eyes moved back and forth as she stared at the table. Her head jerked up.
"Who talked to him?"
"Miner," Jack said.
"Miner's being paid to feed you lies."
"Michelle, be quiet," Bob said.
"By whom?" Jack said.
"The company. He'll say whatever Dad tells him to as long as we keep giving him drugs for Teresa."
Bob sighed and leaned back in his chair, shaking his head. He capped his Bic pen, opened his briefcase, and started packing up.
"He's lying to you," Michelle continued. "That's not what happened. Dad wouldn't send me away like that. Our whole operation will collapse if I'm not there."
Anne stood and walked around the table.
"Stand up."
Michelle looked up at Anne and shook her head in disbelief.
"I didn't kill anyone."
"Evidence says you did."
"What are you charging Michelle with?" Bob said.
4 counts of first-degree murder, and now bribing a police officer."
"What? Bob, I didn't kill any of these people."
Bob held up his hand.
"What do you have besides the gun?"
"Witness testimony that says she pulled the trigger on Vasquez and Morales," Jack said.
"That is a bald-faced lie."
"A campaign pin found at the scene with her fingerprints on it," Anne said.
"And at Matt and Amy's house?"
Anne patted Michelle on the shoulder.
"Stand up."
Michelle, panicky, looked to Bob for help. "The gun," Jack said. Bob shook his head.
"Those murder charges won't stick, and you know it."
"The bribing a police officer will," Jack said.
"Bob?"
Michelle asked.
"Go on. We'll get bail posted and have you out by tomorrow."
"Tomorrow?"
"You just admitted to bribing Miner. There's only so much I can do.
Her shoulders slumped. She exhaled, straightened, and stood, her chair scraping loudly against the floor.
Michelle Ryan Doyle, you're under arrest for the murder of Paco Morales, Diego Vasquez, Matt Doyle, and Amy Doyle, and for bribing a police officer, Anne said.
Someone is setting me up,
Michelle said, panic creeping into her voice. Who? Jack said.
Kyle Grant.
Why?
I don't know, because Eddie was replacing him,
Michelle said. Personally or professionally, Jack said. When Michelle narrowed her eyes, Jack continued. Yeah, Kyle told me you were fucking him, too.
He hated Eddie. Something to do with Kyle's father in prison. I don't know. That's why he was so mad about me and Eddie.
So Kyle killed Matt and Amy because he was jealous?
Anne asked.
Yes. Try again,
Anne said. She grasped Michelle's elbow and propelled her toward the door.
He was driving west with Eddie McBride when Matt and Amy were killed.
Then he's working with someone.
Michelle pulled against Anne's grip, which only made Anne use more force.
You're hurting me.
Stop fighting or I'll cuff you.
Hang on, Jack said. He stepped forward. Who would hate you so much? They would set you up for 4 murders. Jack could smell Michelle's terror. Her eyes rolled around the room, as if searching for the culprit in the corners.
Brian Grant, she said triumphantly, because I made Matt use another contractor.
The Pedrozas were killed before Brian knew.
His brother did. Kyle, they're in on this together. How can you not see it?
How would Brian or Kyle plant the gun in your house?
Anne said. And get your fingerprints all over it. Michelle was searching for a plausible answer.
Michelle, stop, Bob said. You'll be out of jail in 24 hours tops.
But I'll miss my brother's funeral.
Anne led Michelle out of the room, still reciting the warning. Michelle called over her shoulder.
I didn't do this. McBride, I'm going to destroy you when this is all over.
Jack turned to Bob.
You know, you could have waited until after the funeral, Bob said. The town won't forgive you for that.
I'm here to do a job, not win a popularity contest. My job is to solve crimes and stop crime when I can. I call arresting someone for 4 murders and playing a role, though small, in the search of the front of a suspected crime organization, a pretty fucking good day at the office.
Well, when you get fired, you can come work with me. Shirley is on me about retiring, and she's about convinced me.
He opened his briefcase and took out a folded legal document.
Your divorce papers.
Jack pulled out his phone. I have an audio file to send you, for our case. Bob raised his eyebrows.
Should I be alone when I listen to it?
Nothing like that. But it's not good for Julie. With a weary sigh, Bob patted Jack on the shoulder and walked down the hall to take care of his client. Jack's phone vibrated with a text from Ellie.
Eddie isn't here, nor does it look like he's been here.
Thanks for checking. I'll call you later.
Okay.
He was putting his phone back in his pocket and adjusting his bulletproof vest beneath his shirt when his phone rang. McBride.
Who's Brian Grant?
Tom Hunter said.
Kyle Grant's brother. He was a suspect in the Doyle murders, but he's been ruled out.
Why?
Got a call from Seagoville. Some dumbass let Grant make a call.
And he called Brian.
Looks like it. Have you talked to Eddie?
No, I've been trying to get in touch with him since last night. You?
No. We've tried to track his phone, but it must be turned off or dead.
Is there a blue and white 69 Ford in the parking lot?
Yeah, damn nice truck.
Jack tried to ignore the stab of fear in his chest. It's Eddie's. Tom Hunter didn't reply for a moment.
Shit.
Is Miner there?
Yeah, talking to Doyle. They look awfully cozy.
That cozy relationship gave us Michelle Ryan's motive.
Pull Miner away and tell him to find Brian Grant. I'm on my way back to Stillwater. Chapter 46. Miner leaned against the counter as Susan straightened and restraightened the items on her desk with her good hand. She wore a black skirt and white blouse for Matt and Amy's funeral. Her daughter, Paige, stood beside her behind the front desk at City Hall. Paige wore Susan's phone headset and had a pad of paper lined with notes in front of her.
"Paige gonna watch the front for you while you're gone?" Miner asked.
"Yes. Ellie's closing the book bank for a couple hours," Paige explained. "Can't very well shut down City Hall,"
Susan forced a laugh.
"No, I imagine calls will be light."
The phone rang and Paige picked it up.
"Stillwater City Hall, how may I direct your call?"
She paused.
"I'll put you through to his voicemail."
She punched buttons on the phone and looked at Miner.
"I wouldn't count on it. Everyone's calling about Doyle Industries and the rumor Michelle's been arrested."
"Susan, where's Brian?"
"Why?"
"I want to talk to him."
"What about?"
"Have you seen him?"
"She hasn't seen him since yesterday morning." "Paige! Why would you lie for him?"
Paige spat.
"He broke your hand." "No, he didn't. How many times do I have to tell you?"
"Paige, if you've got this, I need to talk to Susan alone."
Miner lifted the breakaway counter, walked to the door beneath the stairs, and waited for Paige to buzz him through. When the door clicked, Miner opened it and held it for Susan. Reluctantly, she followed. Miner motioned for Susan to sit in a metal chair next to his desk, then settled into his own chair. He leaned back and crossed an ankle over his knee.
"Now, Susan, no more bullshit."
Susan's head shot up at the profanity.
"I'm not..."
"Yes, you are, and I'm not judging you for it. Trust me, I'm the last person on earth who would judge someone for lying or stealing or going against their morals for their family. But we're talking about murder here, and you've got 3 kids to think about."
"Brian didn't kill anyone."
"How are you so sure? He doesn't have an alibi for Matt and Amy's murders."
Susan closed her eyes and inhaled deeply. She didn't see or hear Jack walk in and stop at the door.
"If he would have just taken me to the hospital, none of this would have happened."
"What do you mean?"
She opened her eyes and saw Jack.
"On the way home from the lake, Brian was livid. I've never seen him as angry as he was that night. He was almost as pissed at Eddie as Matt."
"Why?"
"Before we left the bonfire, Eddie told Brian if he ever hurt me, he'd make sure Brian regretted it."
"Are you close with Eddie?" Miner asked.
He looked to Jack, who stared at the floor with a contemplative expression.
"No, I hardly know him. Of course, Brian got all kinds of ideas based on Eddie's reputation. Between Matt and Eddie, I knew I had to do something to divert Brian's attention."
"You baited him to get angry with you," Jack said.
Susan shook her head.
"I slammed my hand in the car door when he went into the shop. I begged him to take me to the hospital. I knew by the time we were done, he would have lost a bit of his high, calmed down, seen reason."
"But Paige took you," Miner said.
"Brian's never taken me. I don't know why I thought this time would be different."
Her face tensed.
"Even so, I don't believe Brian killed Matt and Amy."
"But he's involved somehow. Kyle's implicated him," Miner said.
"Of course he has."
Her shoulders slumped and she sighed.
"I came home yesterday, and Brian wasn't there. No note, wouldn't answer my texts or pick up when I called. I checked the caller ID on our home phone and saw the number from a jail and knew."
She fiddled with her cast.
"Over the years, Kyle's tried to get Brian involved in his stuff, but Brian's always refused."
Susan looked up and saw Jack. She spoke to Jack as much as Miner.
"Brian's a good man, but sometimes it's a struggle. he'd see Kyle with a wad of cash after working 15-hour days on a job and still barely being able to pay the bills.
Did you talk to Brian after Kyle called?
He called. He was high, drunk, not making much sense.
What did he say?
Things were going to be okay from now on.
He didn't get more specific.
Susan looked down and to the left.
No.
Susan.
He's my husband, Miner.
Jack stepped into the room. Did he say anything about my brother? She closed her eyes, as if blocking out the world would make the truth go away. Finally, she nodded. What did he say? Her eyes met Jack's.
That Eddie McBride was our ticket to the good life.
Jack stared out the window of his office and tried to forget it was his brother who was missing and work the case like the objective cop he needed to be. He had to remind himself that his brother had been undercover for 20 years and had no doubt gotten out of worse scrapes than this. What a conversation that would be, listening to Eddie recount the double life he'd been living for so long. Jack rubbed his face. He hoped they had the opportunity to have it. Brian Grant was in the wind, with his phone turned off. Based on Brian's comment to Susan, Kyle's message had been about Eddie being a narc. If Brian had intercepted Eddie somewhere on his way home, where did he take him? Or the better question, to whom did he take him? Michelle? Joe? The Pedrozas? Okay, I'll question Michelle about Eddie. How did Doyle react to Eddie being a narc? Jack said. Not surprised. He suspected it. He blames Michelle for everything. Miner paused. I think he's lying. About Michelle? Yep. Jack nodded. As much as he didn't want to, he believed Michelle's protestations of innocence. The question now became, who's setting her up? Me too. Do you think Joe killed Matt and Amy? Miner shook his head. No. I think he's making her the fall guy to save his own skin. Christ, this family is fucked up. Doyle gave up his daughter for the murder of his son to save his drug business. Miner nodded. Suspect Joe was so mad about Eddie, he didn't really think his lie through. It's a stupid play, if so. Phone records are the easiest thing to check, Jack said. Criminals are never as smart as they think they are, Miner said. Nathan Starling knocked on the door and entered without waiting for a response. His eyes were bright with excitement. Chief, sorry to interrupt, but you're going to want to hear this. Jack expected Eric Sterry to be in late middle age, on the cusp of retirement. Instead, the man who sat in a chair in the City Hall foyer was younger than Jack and much fitter. A cast covered his right leg from foot to mid-thigh. A woman hovered over him, concern written all over her face. They wore funeral clothes. Jack went forward and held out his hand. Mr. Sterry?
Jack McBride?
Yes. Eric stood with less trouble than Jack would have thought. His wife was ready and eager to help, but Sterry ignored her. He shook Jack's hand with a vice-like grip.
Sheila?
Sheila Sterry fished an iPhone out of her purse and handed it to Eric.
I fell on Saturday, as I'm sure your deputy told you. Broke my phone as well as my leg. Sheila went out and got me a new one, and my teenaged son restored it for me. With all the get-well-soon voicemails and texts, it took me a while to find this. Found it this morning. Came here as soon as we could.
He held up the phone, showing a voicemail from Matt Doyle. He motioned for Jack to take it. Miner and Starling stood at Jack's elbows, silent, while he snapped a glove on his hand and held the phone up an inch or so from his ear.
Eric, it's Matt. Sorry to call so late. I should have listened to you. You were right, I was wrong.
Dad was just here. I can't believe I never saw through him before. God, what a mess. I'm such an idiot. I don't know what to do, who to trust. Chris, maybe, but he won't go against Michelle. He's on his way here. Who knows? He may be as crooked as the rest. Call me tomorrow. The timestamp on the message was 2:35 a.m. What did you warn Matt about?
My grandfather told me not to hire a Doyle, that he would cheat me. I didn't believe him. After Matt told me he was starting his own organic produce business, bankrolled by his father, my grandfather told me he'd heard rumors about Doyle being involved in some pretty shady dealings, shadier than the savings and loan or hot oil. He wouldn't give me details, so all I could do was tell Matt he was making a mistake, that his family wasn't always above board. Matt got defensive, as I would have. I knew when I heard the message that he'd found out what everyone suspected.
He mentioned his brother-in-law. Did he ever talk much about Chris?
He liked him okay, but thought he was a pussy. Chris was content to let Michelle wear the pants, make the living, and skate through life. I was pretty shocked when he said he called him. Only thing I can figure is Matt thought he was outside the family business and he'd be an ally.
Can I keep this for a couple of days until we can establish chain of possession and download the message?
Sure, whatever you need.
Jack motioned to Starling, who pulled an evidence bag out of his back pocket. Jack dropped it into the bag.
I take it you're going to the funeral, Miner said to the Sterrys.
Yes.
Don't mention the message to anyone.
We won't, Eric said. Is it going to help?
Yes, it is, Jack said.
Starling handed the bag to Jack and held the heavy front door open for the Sterrys. Jack turned to Miner and shook his head.
They're never as smart as they think.
Chapter 47. Brian Grant made a production of checking his watch.
We missed the funeral. I'm sure Chris will tell us all about it. I wonder if Michelle made it.
Eddie watched Brian through the slits of his swollen eyes. His captor sat on a wooden stool next to a workbench that resembled Brian's own workshop. Eddie wasn't sure where he was, but based on the distant thwacks and hum of motors, he guessed he was somewhere on the grounds of Cypress Country Club. Brian inspected the baseball bat in his lap, the one Eddie took from him Sunday night. The one Eddie suspected would soon be stained with his own blood. Eddie grunted through the duct tape on his mouth.
You want to talk?
Eddie nodded his head. Brian studied him and slapped the bat in his hand like a cheesy movie villain.
You know if you scream, I'll kill you, right?
Eddie nodded. Brian ripped the duct tape from his mouth. Eddie opened his jaw and moved it around.
Thanks.
Eddie twisted his hands, which were taped behind the back of his chair. His feet were taped to the back legs, pitching him forward into a miserable sitting position.
What are you doing, Brian? You aren't going to get away with this, either of you. Yes, we will. No, you won't. Jack'll catch you. Figure it all out. If he does, all I'll be guilty of is kidnapping you. A federal agent, Brian. That means hard time. Think of Susan, your kids. I am thinking of them. Michelle goes to jail, and Chris takes over the operation. I'll be his right-hand man. We won't have to worry about money. No, just you getting caught and going to jail. Your brother isn't that good.
Eddie remained silent. As the hours had ticked away, Eddie's faith in his brother wavered. He hoped Jack would figure it all out before the Pedrosas showed up to collect him.
It won't just be kidnapping, Brian. If the Pedrosas execute me, which they will, you'll be charged as an accomplice. You're lucky the feds don't have the death penalty, but you might as well be dead. You'll never get out.
Do you want me to tape your mouth back up?
Eddie shook his head.
Then shut up!
Brian sat on the stool, took a tin out of his back pocket, and removed a joint from it, watching Eddie the entire time with something like wonder.
How long you been a DEA agent?
Brian lit the joint and inhaled deeply. He put the lighter in his front shirt pocket.
20 years.
Brian whistled.
Long time. I guess you've done some pretty morally ambiguous things in your life.
Morally ambiguous? Those are a couple of $10 words for a grant.
What do you know about grants?
I told you. I knew your dad in Huntsville. Brian took a hit and held it.
He was a bastard.
Yes, he was. I thought you were different.
I am.
Eddie gave Brian what he hoped was an incredulous look. Pain shot across the back of his skull.
Look at what you're doing, asshole.
Brian shrugged.
A man's got to do what's necessary to provide for his family.
If you say so.
I do. And you wouldn't fucking know about family, would you?
I guess not. Don't you think it looks weird, you not being at the funeral?
No.
I wonder what Susan is telling people who ask about you. You know how small towns are. If they know you were a suspect in Matt and Amy's death, they'll assume you're not there because you're guilty.
They'll know Michelle's been arrested.
No one will believe that.
Sure they will. With the evidence they have, no one knows about the evidence yet.
They're going off reputation. Between you and Michelle as the killer, everyone's gonna assume it's you.
Shut your mouth.
And Susan and the kids having to deal with the stares and whispers.
Shut up!
Her hand? Brian came at Eddie. The brass knuckles crunched against Eddie's jaw and he toppled over. Unfortunately, the chair didn't break apart.
Shit only happens in movies,
Eddie thought. Brian knelt down and blew the sweet smoke of his joint in Eddie's face.
I hope the Pedrozas torture you before they kill you.
You gonna stay and watch? You don't have the stomach for it. You're a fucking coward, just like your dad.
You think so?
I know so. You bully your wife and kids, probably beat them too, but not so anyone can see it. Use your fists on their chests and stomachs, maybe a belt on their backs. All wife beaters are cowards.
Brian stood, pulled his leg back, and kicked Eddie in the stomach with each word he said.
How many times do I have to say it? I don't beat my family!
Brian walked away and picked up the bat.
Eddie coughed up blood and gasped for air. 2, maybe 3 ribs broken. Brian knelt down again, holding the bat in front of Eddie's face.
Call me a coward again.
Though it hurt like a motherfucker and Eddie could barely breathe to do it, he laughed.
Yeah, prove me wrong. Beat up a defenseless man.
Brian pulled a knife out of his pocket and opened it. He waved it in front of Eddie's face.
Know whose this was?
Your dad's.
Granddad's. He was a mean motherfucker, too.
He cut one of Eddie's legs free, then the other. He cut Eddie's hands free, grabbed the bat, and stepped back. Eddie tried to stand and fell to the ground. Brian's laughter ricocheted against the metal walls of the shed. Eddie lay on the ground, waiting for his legs to stop stinging, and wished he could lay there forever. His head pounded with each beat of his heart. One of his lungs had collapsed, and he could barely see through his swollen, tender eyes. He pushed himself to his hands and knees and spit blood onto the concrete floor. He glanced over his shoulder, half expecting Brian to take advantage of his weakened state and go in for the kill. But Brian didn't.
He took a hit on his joint with one hand and held the bat in the other. The knife was nowhere to be seen.
Thank God for small favors,
Eddie thought. Eddie stood on shaky legs, turned to his opponent, and was overcome with a bone-deep weariness. How many times had he been in a similar situation? More than he could count. This had to end.
Come on, Brian. Let's leave. Right now, you and me. I'll testify for you. You testify against Chris.